For the rest of this hour, we're going to talk about meerkats. Now, I wouldn't blame you if you thought that teaching was something that was basically limited to those of us with big brains, or at least those of us who think we have big brains. But there's a study in Science this week that says it isn't necessarily so. According to the study, mature meerkats teach youngsters how to handle food by giving them opportunities to interact with live prey. Here to talk about the results of this study is the lead researcher, Alex Thornton. He's a PhD candidate in the Department of Zoology at the University of Cambridge in the UK, and he joins us from the UK by phone. Thanks for coming, joining us today, Mr. Thornton.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, so now this is a very interesting thing, and I guess, I mean, obviously animals learn things all the time. So why are we talking about teaching in this particular circumstance? Maybe we should define what it means to teach somebody something.
Of course, yeah, that's a very good point. And you're right that a lot of animals, it's been shown in a number of species that animals are capable of learning from each other. There's really good evidence of that in species from guppies to chimpanzees. But the interesting thing to look at in the case of teaching is that here it's not just one animal observing another and then learning as a result. So it's not me just watching you do something and then copying your behavior, or, for example, you probing for termites with a stick and you leaving the stick behind and then me finding it and having a go myself. The real difference here is that in teaching, a knowledgeable individual is actively changing its behavior in a way that promotes learning in another individual.
So, okay, let's bring this to the topic of meerkats. What is a mature meerkat teacher teaching an immature meerkat student?
So what they're teaching is handling skills, basically. It's how to hunt efficiently for prey. So young meerkat pups are terrible at handling prey. Mm-hmm. And helpers basically seem to be giving them opportunities that they wouldn't have otherwise to interact with prey. And they'll gradually introduce them to live prey, allow the pups to practice their handling skills, and this seems to promote the development of handling skills in pups.
What do meerkats eat?
They eat a whole variety of things. I mean, some of the things they eat are pretty easy to catch, for example, insect larvae. But then they eat a lot of things that are pretty difficult to catch, including lizards, small mammals, scorpions, which are potentially dangerous, centipedes, insects.
So how does a meerkat teach another meerkat how to eat a scorpion?
So what happens there is you see this really interesting progression. So young meerkat pups will start to go out on foraging trips with their group when they're around a month old. And they wander around the group making incessant begging calls, these sort of high-pitched calls asking for food. In response to these calls, the helpers will catch food and bring it over. So when the pups are really young, what a helper will do is he'll catch a scorpion, kill it, and then take it over to the pup. Then as the pup starts to get a bit older, the helper will catch a scorpion, maybe bite the sting off, and then give it to the pup alive. So the scorpion is stingless, and the pup has to actually handle it and catch it himself. Then finally, once pups are approaching independence, the adults will actually bring them live prey items, which the pups have to fend with alone.
Okay. That sounds like teaching. We're talking with Alex Thornton. He's a graduate student at the University of Cambridge in Cambridge, England, about a study he has in Science, which is always a good thing for a graduate student to have as a paper in Science, I can tell you, about the fact that there is teaching in meerkats. And we'd like to hear your calls or questions. It doesn't have to only be about meerkats. We could talk more generally about teaching in the animal kingdom. Our number is 1-800-989-8255. That's 1-800-989-TALK. But we do have a question about meerkats, so let's go to Andrew in Santa Rosa, California. Andrew, welcome to the program.
Hi. excuse me. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, first of all, it would be helpful. I don't even know what a meerkat is.
Ah, good point. I think we left that out. Mr. Thornton.
Okay. Meerkats, they're a species of mongoose that live in the sort of arid regions of southern Africa. So I study meerkats in the Kalahari Desert in South Africa. They're a highly cooperative species of mammal, so that's probably one of the reasons why they're so well known. Well, that and the fact that they're pretty cute as well. So they live in these groups where there's a dominant pair who produce the majority of the pups. So basically 80% of the pups in a group are produced by the dominant pair. And then other group members assist in raising those pups. So they'll feed the pups, they'll teach the pups, They'll babysit pups that are at the burrow. They'll also go on guard and look out for predators to warn the group if there's danger.
Okay. Well, so whether with meerkats, I wasn't quite clear, but with meerkats or with other animals, is there any instances of teaching where a group of students or younglings are taught by one or more than one elder? Or
In other words, the classroom of the animal classroom. Got it. Okay, Alex Thornton, have you ever heard of that?
In fact, most reports in the past of teaching or behavior that seems to be teaching, although it wasn't in the past possible to rule out alternatives, is actually in the context of parental care. So most instances, for example, there's a lot of nice reports in cats and cheetahs, are of mothers doing stuff that's really similar to what the meerkats are doing. They're actually going out catching a gazelle, say, and then releasing it alive for the cubs to catch themselves. So in most contexts, it seems to be a one-on-one sort of thing. There was an earlier study this year that was the first real solid evidence for teaching, which was in ants, surprisingly enough. And in there, again, it's a sort of one-on-one interaction where a knowledgeable individual seemed to be teaching naive group members the route to a food source. In the case of the meerkats, it's not one specific teacher teaching one specific pupil, so there's all group members play a part, and there's no kind of special relationship between one teacher and one pupil. But on the other hand, it doesn't really seem to be the case that one individual will be teaching a number of pupils at a time.
So can it be the case that teaching is limited to meerkats and ants in the animal kingdom and humans in the animal kingdom?
No, I think that's almost certainly not the case. And I think that one of the big points that you mentioned that my study raises and that the study earlier this year on ants raises is that in the past people had often assumed that in order to teach you need to be clever, that teaching is quite cognitively complex. And I think that that's almost certainly not true. So we don't need to just be looking at the great apes and species associated with complex cognition. I think we need to be spreading our search a lot further. And I do think that we'll find that teaching is a lot more widespread than we had assumed.
Okay, let's take another call now and go to Marcia in Portland, Oregon. Marcia, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks.
Sure.
Well, I think you maybe just answered my question. I was thinking about feral house cats that will routinely bring prey back to the kittens and have them learn how to hunt it. I think it's one of the things that gives house cats kind of a bad name because they still want to do that even when they don't have kittens. But it sounds like I was wondering if this was unique to meerkats, and it sounds like it's not.
But I think the one of the points here, Marcia, is nobody's actually looked at this in a systematic way to describe it as teaching. Have they, Alex Thornton?
Well, there was some nice work done in the 80s by a researcher called Tim Carrot, who studied domestic cats, and he was looking at exactly the same behavior that your caller just described. So the difficulty there was that he was able to see that. That mother cats do this kind of thing of gradually giving kittens live mice, for example. What wasn't really clear in some of the studies was whether there's a causal relationship between what the mother is doing and acquisition of skills in the kittens. The same applies to the cheetah study that I mentioned earlier. So the difficulty and what Katie, my co-author, and I managed to address in the meerkats is trying to find that link between what the teacher or the supposed teacher is doing and learning in the naive individual, because it could just be that that younger animals are getting better simply because they're maturing, they're getting older and stronger. And it's really important, if you're going to explain a behavior as teaching, that you rule that possibility out.
Let's take another call now from Chip in Little Rock, Arkansas. Chip, welcome to Science Friday.
Yeah, when I was talking with your screener, I must have missed what he said about the cheetahs, because I've seen video and really well documented that the mother cheetah will tire out and not disable completely a little small gazelle, a Tommy's gazelle, and then they'll learn to actually choke, to trip it as they chase it and then choke it. And that seems very close to what he's describing the meerkats doing. They're learning not only to disable and get a hold of the prey, but also to choke it with a throat bite. And again, if I missed something when I was talking with your screener about a cheetah study, I'd I didn't hear that earlier.
Oh, that's okay.
I wondered how that would differ from what I'm describing the cheetahs doing.
Okay. Alex Thornton, what about that?
Well, I think that the behavior that's described in cheetahs, I mean, the difficulty has been, as I mentioned earlier, just trying to establish this link between a causal link between what mothers are doing and what cubs are doing. And the big problem is that studying a large cat in the wild like cheetahs, it's just really quite difficult to get very, very detailed longitudinal data, in part just because you can't really stand next to a cheetah mother while she's bringing food to her cub. It's not particularly safe.
I would think not.
On the other hand, I think that the behavior described in cheetahs and in domestic cats and probably a number of other carnivores is almost certainly a form of teaching. I certainly believe it is. It's just a case that in the scientific literature, other possibilities haven't been totally discounted yet.
All right. Let's take a call now from Mark in Oakland, California. Mark, welcome to Science Friday.
Yes, hi there. Thanks for taking my call. There was a study a few years ago involving vervet monkeys in which the researchers examined the behavior of older monkeys who were interacting with younger monkeys to see whether the older monkeys would change their behavior based on what they might conceivably know about the younger monkeys' knowledge about a particular situation. And what they saw was that the older vervet monkeys did what they did and didn't seem to alter their behavior based on, again, what they might conceivably know about what the younger monkeys could know. And the way these researchers described it, they said that the older monkeys, they were trying to give information to the younger monkeys, but they didn't have what the researchers called a theory of mind for the younger monkeys. And I was wondering, I don't know if you're familiar with that research. I think the researchers were Cheney and Seyfarth or something like that. And I'm wondering if you have any position on whether the meerkats have a theory of mind for the younger ones.
Okay, Alex Thornton, do you know that research? And what about this theory of mind?
I think it's really, really beautiful research. I mean, it's some of the most compelling research into animal minds that's been done. As for the question of whether meerkats have theory of mind, I would say almost certainly no. I have seen no evidence whatsoever that meerkats can attribute mental states or that meerkats know what others know. And I think that the important point to make in this context is that that's actually not necessary in order to teach. So what goes on in meerkats is that helpers are changing their responses, they're changing their provisioning behavior in response to changes in pup begging calls. It's actually a really, really simple mechanism. And the function of the behavior is to teach. It's to actively bring about learning. The mechanism is not at all cognitively complex. So I think that theory of mind is not in any way a prerequisite for teaching, although it might well allow far more complex forms of teaching than what we see in the meerkats.
We're talking about teaching in meerkats, which I'm sure everybody's been thinking about for the last 6 or 7 months. I'm Joe Palca, and this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. But, I mean, this is making me wonder I'm stumbling here. We were talking at the beginning of the program about whether big brain is necessary for teaching, and if ants and meerkats can do it, then obviously you don't have to have that big a brain. But my question is this a behavior that's learned, or is it genetically programmed, or what does this say about the evolutionary development of teaching?
I think that's a really, really interesting question, and the honest answer is that at the moment we just really don't know. We're only just starting to get into this. I mean, in the past the question has always been, is there teaching in animals? And now we know the answer is yes, there is teaching in animals, and so the really, really interesting questions now are to begin to look at under what contexts natural selection might favor the evolution of teaching, whether teaching is learnt at all or not. So I've got a lot of data that I'm starting to analyze now to look at whether animals have to learn to teach. I don't know the answer yet, but hopefully I'll be publishing work on that when it's finished. So I think it's a really interesting area because there's so much we don't know.
I'm curious, what's the direction of this? Do you continue studying meerkats, or do you spread out and start looking in other animals as well?
Both, I suppose, is the easy answer there. I'm applying for funding at the moment, so I'm hoping to get money to go out and do some more research on the meerkats in the Kalahari. But I certainly don't want to restrict my research only to meerkats, great though they are. So I would really like to spread my wings and to look at other species, not only at teaching, but also a number of other areas of animal behavior that I'm interested in.
Okay, we have time for one more quick question, and that goes to Fletcher in Detroit Lakes, Minnesota.
Hi. I was kind of wondering, what's the difference between teaching and learning and actually having culture, like a culture?
Huh. Okay, let's see if we can. Something that you just take from normal behavior, or is that, maybe I should ask Alex Thornton if you can describe that.
Okay. Again, I think that's another really, really interesting question, and it's one that research is only just beginning to address at the moment. So there are a number of reports in the literature of cultural behavior in animals. Some of the really famous ones are in Britain in the 1950s, there was a spread of milk bottle opening among certain species of birds. So it seemed that one bird or a few birds would figure out how to open milk bottles, and then that behavior would spread through the population. More recently, there's been some really nice studies done on culture and chimpanzees, where it seems that different populations of chimpanzees across Africa actually have...
Alex Thornton, we're going to have to wrap it up. Is there a final thought there?
Sorry about that. So I think that there's a lot to learn about the evolution of teaching, and I think it will really illuminate our understanding of the evolution of culture as well.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you very much for bringing that subject to us. It's really interesting. Alex Thornton is a PhD candidate in the Department of Zoology at the University of Cambridge. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Kimberly Jones is our technical director. Our audio engineers are Neil Rauschen at New York and Vahan Baladuni in Washington. Greg Smith composed our theme music. For internet mail, if you want to send us a note, you can email us. The address is scifry@npr.org. Check out sciencefriday.com for more information and links to today's program. You can listen to past editions of Science Friday online or take them with you as a podcast. And check out Science Friday's Kids Connection free curriculum materials for teaching Science Friday using Science Friday. For NPR, I better stop now. For NPR News in New York, I'm Joe Palca.